There's a whole lot of things I want to tell you about. Adventures, dangerous and queer. Some you could guess, and some I've only hinted at. So please lend me your ear.
Everyone has a relationship with gender. What's your story? Hello and welcome to Gender Stories with your host, Dr. Alex Yantafi.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Gender Stories. I know that we say that I'm super excited, but I really am super excited about every guest that I have on the podcast. And today I'm incredibly honored to be interviewing Pigeon Pagones, who is an activist on behalf of intersex and marginalized people. They have advanced youth advocacy with Interact. They launched an intersex YouTube channel, Written for Everyday Feminism, and co-founded the Intersex Justice Project and the hashtag End Intersex Surgery campaign, and introduced the intersex and non-binary clothing line Too Cute to Be Binary. They've created two short documentaries, The Son I Never Had, which premiered at Outfest, and The Normal Girl, which screened at the American Pavilion at the Cannes Film Festival. They've appeared on the cover of National Geographic's Gender Revolution special issues and been honored as an LGBT champion of change by the Obama White House. They're currently documenting intersex people of color for Physical Record, a new photo series subsidized by Astria Intersex Human Rights Fund. And then they have a book that's coming out, which is a memoir called Nobody Needs to Know, which I got the privilege to read.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Suddenly you said you're excited about me, but you literally say that to all your guests, so...
I do, but like, I'm always extra excited for the current guest. What can I say? I'm just a very excitable kind of person, Pigeon. I can't help it. But I am really excited about talking to you. So I know I've read the memoir and I know what it's about, but maybe let's start from there and maybe even start with, why did you decide to write a memoir? Like, what made you feel like that's what you wanted to create in this moment in time?
I don't know. Honestly, it changed. It evolved over the writing of it, the purpose or the reason. At first, I just needed money, and I had no jobs anymore because the pandemic started, and all my jobs were usually speaking in person to groups of people. So I lost all my contracts overnight, and an opportunity presented itself to write a memoir. And I said, will they pay me money? And they said, yes. And so I said, okay, I'll do it.
So that's fair.
How that started. But what I think is important or interesting that over time, as I'm writing it, the past 3 years, the attacks on trans people, the legal, the gender, the trans exclusionary legislation has been ramping up. And, you know, currently there's over 800 bills or 750 bills nationwide, if you count federal and state, that are centered on taking certain, taking trans people's certain rights away from trans people, or just, you know, just like horrible stuff. I'm sure your listeners know. I'm not going to explain them. But what I think is not being talked about is these bills are called trans exclusionary, or what are they called, by the way? I keep forgetting what the term is. What do you know what the general umbrella term is?
I just call them like anti-trans bills.
Thank you.
Or,
yes,
you know,
that is the word. I keep forgetting.
You know, at home I just call them the hate bills,
yes,
you know, like, because why do people hate us and have to do this to us? But there you go.
Okay, so the anti-trans bill, the anti-trans legislation, thank you. I think something that's not being mentioned is that these are also anti-intersex bills.
Yes.
And not just because intersex people can also be trans, and many of us are, but more specifically because a lot, over 81% of these bills on average, so over the last 4 years, 81% of them have specific carve out to allow and maintain doctors' rights and surgeons' rights to continue harming intersex people in order to, quote unquote, normalize us and push us into a binary box of either male or female, with mutilating surgeries on our genitals, on our reproductive organs, et cetera, and hormones. And so my book is going to come out in this very interesting time in a few months, in August 2023, when not only are there over 800 bills, you know, attacking trans people, but there's 81% of them have carve outs to continue the harm that's been happening to intersex people since the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. 1940s and 50s, because pretty soon it'll be the 40s and 20s, so I should, 20s, so the 2040s, sure. So I should clarify. But what's really wild is that this is the first time in history. So these surgeries and the harm that's occurred with on intersex people has happened almost 100 years now.
Yeah.
But it's never been written into law. And so 4 bills passed, I believe, last year, which had the intersex exclusions or the intersex carve-outs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first time we've seen now that intersex, anti-intersex language has been written into a piece of legislation. Never had that before. So what I think this shows is that these bills, I know I'm preaching to the choir of everyone in this room or listening, but these bills are not about as the proponents would have you believe, that these bills, as they say, are about protecting young people. These bills are not about protecting children. They're purely and solely, they're purely and 100% about transphobia. And like you said, hating trans people. And it couldn't be clearer, because if it was about protecting children, they wouldn't have the 81% on average of these bills would not have carve outs for intersex people to get the exact things that they claim they're protecting trans people from. And I can't say any of what I just said without underscoring the fact that, because I don't want people's minds to then jump and say, well, Pigeon, if you're saying these surgeries are bad for intersex kids, then aren't they bad for trans people? And it's like, no, because there's a difference. There's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is consent and desire. Trans people desire these gender-affirming procedures, and they can give informed consent, they and their families together, and willingly are giving informed consent and desire these procedures, desire these hormones, desire these procedures that are life-affirming for them. Now, with intersex kids, the surgeries that I and other intersex people are against are not for like adults that can consent, or young adults or teens that can consent. It's for the kids that can't speak yet, like literally for infants who cannot talk, for toddlers who cannot really, you know, and even like young kids who like are super young and cannot give informed consent about the decisions that we made about their bodies. So even though these are similar procedures and they actually come from the same world, like they were, these types of surgeries and these hormones come from the same source back in the day.
Yeah.
They're very different, because one is wanted and one is like, well, we don't know if someone wants it because they're too young, when I'm talking about intersex people. So my book, I think, is coming out without me knowing. And the reason I wrote it without me knowing at the beginning is to hopefully change some people's hearts and minds, and shift a little bit of the discourse and the conversation about trans rights, bodily autonomy, because I think that's what my story highlights, and that's what all intersex people's stories highlights and trans people's stories highlight, is the need and the ways in which some of us don't have bodily autonomy, and how we should all have bodily autonomy. So I think that's why I wrote this book. I didn't know back then, Even though I probably should have. I should have seen the writing on the wall. And I did see the writing on the wall. I just didn't know it would be this quick and this fast. And when I say I knew I did see the writing on the wall, it's because I started to see a lot of chatter in like the QAnon right wing, like super right wing groups about gender and about pronouns. And it's like, it just started to dominate their thinking and things that they were talking about. And there was an example that I saw that kind of stays with me, which is on January 6th. I forget what the year was, but the time that Trump was still like, well, Trump had lost the election. And yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. The insurrection. When they stormed the Capitol. Yeah, the insurrection. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when that happened, there's people that got into the Capitol. And one of the things, the ones that got into the actual chambers, I remember like the ones with the horns on the head and the face paint.
Yes,
and
I remember those. Yeah.
One of the things they said when they were in there was like, they were just like making fun of pronouns and talking about pronouns and trans people. And just like, I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, they are really not only like, I guess, about conservative politics, which these people are not really about conservative politics. They're right wing extremists, but they're also just, they're really, the glue that holds them together is really like transphobia lately. Mm-hmm. And as we see from that day, I think that was 2020, that day, January 6th, 2020.
I think so too,
So that was 3 years ago. And 3 years ago, I remember thinking like, this is bad. And now it's gotten really, really bad for trans people and also intersex people. And I will also say that this is a beautiful reason, or not a beautiful reason, but this is a reason why intersex people and trans people should work together and be together and fight together. Mm-hmm. Alongside our, you know, LGBTQ, two-spirit, and plus community, and people with disabilities, like disability justice community. I think, but especially for trans and intersex people right now, I think we have a lot more in common than we don't have in common. And it's a really good moment to fight for each other and to stand up in solidarity with each other. Yeah. So I think that's why my book came out now.
Yeah, I think the timing is really perfect. Like you said, you know, that was not necessarily the driver. The driver was surviving under capitalism in a pandemic.
Yeah.
But, you know, the timing is just right because, yeah, and I think that cross-movement solidarity you talk about is so important.
Right.
You know, because a lot of your book, you know, as I was reading it, there is so much about how invested the system, especially the medical system, is in maintaining, you know, this idea of a rigid gender binary, right?
Yeah.
Like there were a lot of, like, you were lied to as a child.
Yeah.
Right? You were straight up lied to by healthcare providers, you know, and a lot of it was like, you know, this is for when you grow up and you have sex with your husband, right? You know, this is like what we expect of you, right? And so it's all this kind of trying to uphold cisgenderism, really, which hurts everybody, I think, right? But definitely hurts intersex folks and trans folks and non-binary folks. And so one of my favorite sentences in your book is at the end of, towards the end of part two, and you say, performing normal was no longer the only path to happiness. This was once you were like, right, in college, and I think you'd just broken out with your boyfriend at the time, and you're really starting to come into your own, you know, in your 20s. And that sentence really resonated for me as a trans and non-binary person, this idea of performing normal was no longer the only path to happiness. So what was that like for you, that moment of going from this is what's expected from me to, hang on a minute, this is not the only way to exist, if that makes sense?
It was, a big adjustment It's when I started really abusing alcohol and drugs, like weed. I mean, I feel like people don't really say they could abuse weed, but the way I was smoking and drinking was just to pass out and black out. Mm-hmm. Actually, I started that in high school. But in college, I remember it got really bad after it was really bad in high school too. But it was a time when I just wanted to be dead. After I found out, when I got my medical records, I didn't want to live. So I was trying to kill myself like every night and weekend with alcohol, or kill the pain, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really, 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 really difficult. It was really difficult. Especially that first year or two after I found out, because I didn't tell anybody. So it was just, and I had like lived with secrets before, but I didn't have the complete picture. So I was living with like partial secrets. And then when I got the full picture and I lived with that alone, like secretly, I mean, like kept it as a secret. That was really hard. So it was a really difficult time when I went from that transition from performing normal in one way, like before I knew everything. And then after I found out stuff, it's like performing a whole different kind of normal, which really at that point was just like, I'm okay enough to go to class sometimes. That was my normal. Cause I was a mess. And then I also knew that I had XY chromosomes. I knew that I was, I had a clitorectomy. I knew that I had testes that I was born with that were taken out. And so I had to walk around with people that know me as this like normal girl, cisgender normal girl, a straight cisgender normal girl. But in my head, I knew I was born with XY chromosomes, had internal testes that were taken out, had an enlarged clitoris that was removed, was given a vaginoplasty when I was 11. And so, whereas in high school, the younger version of me, before I knew all that stuff, I only knew a version of it, a lie that was told to me as a kid, which was I couldn't have babies because I had cancer in my ovaries and the doctors removed them to save my life. And I couldn't have a period because the ovaries were gone. So I lived with that quote unquote secret, which really wasn't a full, like a real secret, but it kind of, parts of it were true, but it, not the cancer and not, I didn't have ovaries. But so I performed normal to like cope with that in high school. Like I went to an all girls Catholic high school and my performer normal was lying that I had, that I got my period. I started that in junior high when everyone else started getting their period. And then in high school, I started lying about sex, that I loved it. It was so great. Oh my God, I love sex with my boyfriend. But meanwhile, like I was wishing I was dead every time we had sex. Like I was talking to God, like, why I hate you. Like, I hate you, God. And why did you do this? Or just like, why? Like, I don't even like, just like, I hate you. And why? Like, and I hate me and I hate life and I hate you. And I hate everything. But I'm like performing for my boyfriend. Like, I love this. The sex is so good. And so years and years of that, just faking and faking and faking. And then you get your papers, my medical papers. So it just crushed me. So when I finally broke free of that was kind of maybe 2 years after college started, or I started to break free of that, started to put the pieces to a different life together, was when I met a girl, basically. Well, when I started, when I met a girlfriend, started dating her, she taught me about queer, what queer meant, that she identified as queer and what that meant. And I remember like learning that there's like her, like she said that she's not attracted to people's body, like genitals, but to their hearts and their soul. Even though I'm pretty sure she's also attracted to people's genitals, because she's like a straight up, like, she's just like 100% lesbian, like butch, like a traditional butch lesbian. So, but anyways, I don't think she'd ever date a cis man, but But hearing someone say that and having all of this shame about my body, my genitals, my reproductive organs and all this, and thinking there's nobody that could ever love me. And then hearing somebody say that opened the door for me into this world of people that are not only queer, but trans and non-binary and at different stages of transitioning their bodies or have transitioned their bodies with surgeries, with hormones, etc. With, you know, even non-surgery things like chest binders or wearing or packing and all types of things. So I entered this world and started to realize I might have a home here or a place here. And so that's when I think I started, that quote was more relevant about when I started to realize like I didn't have to perform. Normal wasn't like the only path towards, did I say happiness?
Yeah. I think you did say happiness. Yeah.
So yeah, I found happiness with queer people and trans people and that community and women in gender studies, you know, that department I was in at college and having professors who were teaching us about these topics as well. We were learning about trans histories and trans, I don't know what the word is, but, you know, academic papers from trans people and books and about transness. Yeah. And queer theory, trans, I think it's trans theory. And I was even studying intersex at the time. So I was, that's when it started to realize that maybe I have a chance at happiness by just being me. And that's only possible because of the queer community. If there was no queer community in the world and trans community, I would still be that person who was, well, I'd either be dead now or I'd be that person that's just like numbing themselves and trying to black out every single night or every single weekend or as much as I can because the pain was too difficult to deal with of being so abnormal or different than everyone else.
Yeah, I'm just taking a deep breath because I could feel myself tearing up when you were talking about queer community, because I really feel that, like, if I hadn't found queer community, honestly, I don't know where I would be right now. Yeah. I don't know that I would be in my 50s, you know, with my family and a happy life and very embedded in community. But that was so important because, you know, as somebody who's like brought up in Italy, my mom is from Sicily, that's you know, I knew that there were some people who were queer. You don't talk about it. One of my friends was sent to conversion therapy, you know, like disappeared when I was in high school, basically. And it was like, if I hadn't found queer community, I don't know how I would have survived. Yeah. Honestly, I think that's true for a lot of us. And yeah, I think that is just true for a lot of us, that often we focus on the celebration piece, but there is the heart crashing piece of when you're like, come into terms with everything, right? Whether it's being intersex for you, you know, or being trans, you know, or queer for other folks. I think there is a moment, you know what I mean? Like a transition of sorts from all these expectations the world's put on us into a whole different way of being in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a beautiful scene in your book when you, I think it was Feminist in Action, the student club Fia. That you went to, and Fia, that's right, and everybody's saying name and pronouns, and you're like, the first time that somebody, you know, and I was like, yes, I remember the first time that somebody asked me, like, what are your pronouns, you know, when I moved to the States, and I was like, exactly, and then I was like,
first of all, I'm like not good at grammar, so I'm like, what is a pronoun, like, I don't even know English grammar to begin with.
And second of all, that's like way like, more complicated a question. Yeah.
But then again, it's not duh for me if you actually knew my history and my everything.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes people don't understand how complex that question can be, right? Yeah. Such a simple and yet complicated question. Oh my God, I love that kaleidoscope. there was another question I wanted to ask you, but then I got really on an all other track, and that's okay.
Well, I want to say about queer community that you reminded me. Mm-hmm. I was at a concert last night, I was telling you, and it was like really queer. A lot of queer people there, and the energy was beautiful. So electric and beautiful that the performer kept just thanking us. Like they couldn't even catch their words sometimes because they were feeling so much gratitude to the energy in the crowd, the crowd's mm-hmm. energy towards them. And then afterwards, there was a queer party that was just like three doors down. So it's called Boots.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a monthly queer party. It's in a different place every time. And they put it in that neighborhood so it could be right by the concert. There was a few concerts going on. I was at Caroline Palacek, and like across the street was also Cali Uchis. And there was just a lot of concerts last night. So
yeah,
I was thinking when you were talking about that, like I was thinking about how much queer culture is seen as like a party. Like you think of Pride or you think of the club scene or drag or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, it is, because there's so much suffering that we had to do to get to survive that I think we celebrate extra hard when we can. And if you think about cis straight people, like they literally cannot dance, most of them. And
it's real.
They like can't have fun. Like, I mean, they don't, their idea of fun is like just like getting drunk and listening to like top 40 music sometimes, but like hardly moving. They're just like, like they literally don't know how to like let go and have fun. And there's like, it's just so boring. Like they wear like Patagonia vests out to the club with like white button ups or something, you know, like just like no color, no pizzazz, no glitter, no nothing. And it's just like, that's another thing that I love about the queer community is like, we celebrate so hard because we've suffered so much. And we've gone, well, most of us have gone through such trials and tribulations to even be alive right now. And we know that so many people in our community didn't make it to this point, to adulthood, or, you know, some people didn't even get through their teenage years, whether it was violence enacted on them, whether they were stripped and taken to conversion camps.
Yeah.
And brainwashed or attempted to be brainwashed, or they committed suicide, which is also huge in the intersex community as well. So yeah, and the queer community is life-saving, and it's also, it's literally under attack right now. Like especially in places like Florida and some other states where I just saw that the governor passed a bill or signed a bill yesterday that says you can, medical providers can conscientiously object to giving anyone health care as if it's like makes their, that makes them, makes, you know, goes against their religious beliefs. So now it's not legal to discriminate against people for their race, for their disability, et cetera, their sex, but it is now legal to discriminate against somebody if they're trans, gender, or queer. So it's like, we're literally under attack. And so thank God for queer community. Queer community is under attack. We need to keep it.
Yeah.
We need to do all that we can to protect it. And we will. Like, I think this is just going to backfire for them, for the people that are trying to push this stuff forward. It's just going to, we're just going to come out of it stronger and better than before, just like we did in the past. And we always will.
Yeah.
But it's an important, it's just a hard time right now. We're going to have to get through it though.
Yeah, I believe that too, that we're going to get through it, but it is a hard time. And it's great to get to celebrate with community when you can, because it is that how precious life is. Yeah, I've been watching Eurovision, and you can always tell which ones are the straight musicians and the queer musicians from how they move. That is real. Yeah, so much more to say about that. But I want to take a moment to talk about another thing that's in your memoir, which is, as well as, of course, talking about your own experiences as an intersex person and that kind of history that you have, and then all the advocacy that you were part of to really kind of shut it down, especially at the Lurie's Hospital, you know, where a lot of those procedures were performed for you. Another aspect that's really rich in your book is class and culture, I feel, right? Like when you talk about like moving neighborhoods and moving houses and, you know, and, moving farther away from your extended family, closer, you know, there was a lot, as somebody who comes from a more collectivist culture with like more extended family, you know, I was really following that journey of class and culture as well. And there was a moment, you know, when you start talking to your mom, when you find out about all those things that happened to you and all the lies that you were told, And really, my heart went really out to your parents as well, and all the pressure that had been put on them. Yeah. And the lies that they were told too, probably, you know, in a different way.
They were, yeah.
But yeah, exactly. And so I don't know if you want to share anything about that, because I think sometimes people don't realize how much pressure doctors can put on parents, you know?
Yeah.
And especially, you know, I think especially parents who are not Anglo, you know, who are not upper class.
Yeah.
I think there's just so much pressure.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you, yeah, wanted to talk about that at all or not.
Yes. I really tried to infuse my memoir with my upbringing and my childhood and how it felt and how it was. And just Chicago in general. Like, I grew up here. I still live here. I love Chicago. It's like, yeah, it's such a part of
it. It's a beautiful city.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. And
it is.
It's just, it's in my bones. Like, my grandmother was born in Chicago. So I'm on my mom's side, I'm third generation. My dad was born in Chicago, even though his two siblings were born in Greece, but him and his brother were born here. So I'm very rooted here. And yeah, and family was such a big part of my life as a child. Like there was a time when I lived in an apartment building with five apartments and each apartment was different members of my family, except this one apartment that was always like a random person. But all four of the rest were like my aunts, my uncles, my great grandmother and my grandparents and my mom, my aunt, me and my sisters. We all lived in a building. And like, at the time I hated it. I mean, there was parts I liked, but like I mostly hated it and just dreamed to live in the suburbs and like a big house with like my own bedroom and all this stuff. But looking back, I was like, wow, like this is things me and my friends dream about now. Like, let's all get a building and live in different apartments or let's, you know, get a compound, like basically a compound and have different houses on some land. I would prefer a building because I want to stay in a city, but
that's
I would love to. Actually, and I am living that dream right now because my friend lives downstairs in the apartment below, but I would love to have more, like a big, like I had growing up in a way. But not like family, more like chosen family. Cause when it's your family, you could not be that great sometimes. But chosen family had with queer culture, queer politics, queer, like it would be better to live together that way. So, I'm glad that that came across in the book. And then the class thing, yeah, my parents and the culture, my parents are working class people with no college degrees. My dad barely,
That's okay.
I was trying to wave for my neighbor. My dad barely finished, you know, high school. He says he only did it basically to like, I don't even know how he did it, to be honest. He did it just to make my grandma like proud or something. But like, I don't know how he, he probably scammed his way through to get his degree or whatever, his diploma. But, you know, and then my mom, she did finish high school, but she dropped out of college to like a community college because she saw my dad working across the street on a car. And she's like, oh, he, you know, she fell in love. So she ends up having a kid right away with him, which is me. And then they get married. And so she's a young, young parent. He's young. They're not college educated. They don't speak formally like fancy, like rich people. They don't come from money. They don't have a lot of money. And so then to go to these hospitals where these are supposed to be experts and the best in the nation and they're surgeons. Yeah. So these people are already assholes because all surgeons are assholes.
Yes,
like
that's
there's been a survey and it's like 98% of them are assholes. Like it's not a real survey, but it's real.
I feel like it's real. As a disabled person, that feels real to me.
Like I've been told, you know, by people that work with surgeons, they're like, you know, they're not great in terms of personable skills, but they have like good surgery skills and that's all that really matters. You can't really ask for more. So my parents have me, this intersex kid, who they don't even know is intersex at the time. And they're like, you know, presenting me to these doctors who are experts. Now even if you are rich and you have all this educational background, you're still going to be intimidated by surgeons and doctors unless you went to medical school. And you could like, when, you know what you're talking about, but most people already feel this, but now imagine yourself, you don't have those degrees. You're not in college. You're not formally educated in that way, blah, 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 blah. And these doctors are like, this is what needs to happen. And the, like you said, the doctors are giving my parents only part of the picture.
Exactly.
And then telling my parents to give me even less of the picture. Meanwhile, the surgeons are the only ones and the doctors who have the full picture. So they're enlisting my parents as accomplices in their lies and in their harm.
Yeah.
And it's really messed up because they claim back then, and they probably still do today to a certain degree, that they want parents to bond with their child. So if the child is intersex, the parents, they believe, cannot bond with them if it's not a female or a male 100%. So let's do surgery and do all this stuff so the parent can bond with them. But what ends up happening is you ruin a lot of the bonds between parents and child and parents with other people in the family. Because they tell the parents
Absolutely.
Not to tell other people in the family, not to tell friends, not to tell neighbors. And then they tell them not to tell the kid a lot of stuff. So you're forcing a culture of secrecy and lies from the beginning between a parent and their child. And it is heartbreaking because then my mother, for instance, carried a lot of guilt that ate away at her. And then when I grow up and find out what happened, I'm pissed off at the doctors. I'm pissed off at my parents.
Yeah.
And my parents were just doing what the doctors told them was what was the only good thing to do, the best thing to do. And so I totally empathize with my parents. I understand how they could so easily be swept up into that because it's scary, especially some people might be thinking, well, if I was a parent, I would have just stood up for my child. But they also,
easier said than done,
but also these doctors are smart and they told my parents, and they tell many parents, if we don't do this surgery, your child will develop cancer.
Exactly. They scare them.
They scare them with cancer. Mm-hmm. They scare them with the threat of your child might commit suicide if we don't do these surgeries and they don't feel normal. But, and the cancer thing, just to explain, if anyone's like, you're over-exaggerating. No, I'm not. What they do and what they say is, especially for people with me who are born with undescended testes, is they'll say, oh, like 90% of these kids will grow up and have cancer if we don't take these out now, which is a completely inflated statistic.
Absolutely.
And yes. And then the other surgeries they did, they were telling them, was like, oh, your child will grow up with like, I can't remember the word, but my mom described it as saying like that the doctor said I would grow up basically like insecure about my body if they don't let them change the shape of my clitoris or the size of my clitoris.
Yeah.
And things like that. So it's like they make your parents complicit in the harm, and then your parents don't even know they're doing that really. They think they're helping you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really messed up dynamic, but yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. When they make them feel like bad parents if they don't listen to them, right? It's like, you're a bad parent, you know, if you don't listen to those doctors. And it was, you know, when in the book you talk about like your mom bursting into tears, you know, once it starts dawning on her, right? Once she gets out of that denial and how painful it must have been for her as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that is something that a lot of people don't realize. Like, you know, they think, well, like you said, why are the parents not protecting their children? It's actually very, very hard to push back on the medical industrial complex. It's not easy at all.
Even for us.
I mean, as you well know, exactly, as you well know, given that you have done.
I know so much about it, and I still will turn into sometimes like a defenseless rabbit, prey animal when I'm in this doctor's office. Like, I'll come with my questions. Mm-hmm. I'll have my friend with me or on the phone, and they will just railroad me, and I'll just leave feeling like I couldn't even say what I wanted to say. I didn't get to ask my questions. I forgot what I wanted to say. It's such a it's such a power dynamic usually that they have more power than you in the room, and they just railroad you. And mm-hmm. and this is someone who's been to college, who studied this whole thing.
Yeah.
I have a master's degree. I've studied how the yeah. medical industrial complex has harmed intersex people, and I still mm-hmm. get harmed. I still don't understand sometimes how to stand up for myself or how to assert my rights. And so for my parents, I can imagine it was easy. And for a lot of parents of intersex people, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. And especially like the culture thing too, like my family was taught, a lot of families, a lot of people are taught to just respect yeah. doctors.
Exactly.
They're like gods, like mm-hmm. they, especially surgeons,
yeah.
You know, like this country, you know, it's part of the reason people come to this country, they think, you know, like your grandparents. So you yes. live with this legacy of like, well, we came to America and, you know, we have the best everything here, doctors and medicine yes. and culture and everything yeah. and everything and everything. And so to challenge these people is you wouldn't do that because it's yeah. such a privilege to have the best healthcare in the world, et cetera, et cetera. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's unthinkable.
And almost, it is. Right? Yeah. Like, why would a doctor want to hurt a kid? It doesn't make any
exactly.
sense.
Exactly. But the dead, and you know, the dead, you did experience a lot of medical trauma
yeah.
on top of being lied to, on top of, you know, finding out kind of when you were 18, I think, right? That you were intersex, like when you were at college, like, there's also a lot of medical trauma that these doctors inflicted on you mm-hmm. that was unnecessary.
Yes, completely.
That was really just about making you fit into this idea that they had.
It was all like, unnecessary. And all,
yeah. And that's horrifying to think about, you know, how comfortable, like going back to what we were talking about with conservatives who want to protect kids in air quotes, but they don't exactly, because actually they're fine with intersex babies and young children being, you know, going through all this unnecessary procedures. And then they're trying to tell us, oh, trans and non-binary and gender expansive kids shouldn't go through any medical procedures. They're too young.
Right.
Like the hypocrisy is mind blowing.
Yes.
Right? Yes. It's definitely mind blowing.
It shows the hypocrisy and it shows that it's all,
yes.
It's all a lie and it's all about transphobia.
Oh, it's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
We can say
exactly.
bullshit. We can say bullshit.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. So true. There's so many things that I want to talk about, but I also want to be respectful of your time. Oh, I do want to talk about one thing. One thing that I love is that, before your book starts, you have a quote from Battlestar Galactica,
uh-huh.
and you also talk about space
yeah.
in like a couple of points in the book. And, as somebody who's like a big, like science fiction and fantasy fan and like space, like, you know, person who's into space, I was like, I think there are a lot of like trans and queer people who are really into like space, the stars, science fiction. For me, I think it's something about imagining a world where we are possible, right? I mean, we are possible, but in a way that's not, you know, in a way that's easy and celebrated and inclusive, right? And so I was curious about why you chose a quote from Battlestar Galactica to start your book, and what does space means to you?
Well, to be honest, I've never seen an episode of Battlestar Galactica in my life or Star Trek. But I am obsessed with space and thinking about space and the universe mm-hmm. and
yes.
Quantum physics and micro. I like to think about the big vastness of everything, and also going inward, like micro. Is it called microbiology or like
I think
molecular
so.
Biology?
Yeah.
Like thinking of things on the
yes.
nano scale too, like
yeah.
on the atoms. Like I guess yeah. So the atomic level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just like I like to think about. It's like I am obsessed. Like it is, it's usually what I think about and what I talk about the most. And the thing, like I'm always contemplating and I'm always in shock. Like I'm always on my knees, almost crying in fear and also like joy. It's just like how big the universe is. You cannot fathom it. Nobody can. And it's, it's mind blowing. Literally it hurts my head sometimes to think about. So I was looking up quotes that can like open the book that were not like representative of what I was trying to talk about, which is the vastness of gender and the vastness of sex too, because I think sex is just as borderless as gender and boundaryless. And so I was just searching quotes and quotes and quotes and quotes, and nothing was really this is okay. And then I saw this quote and I'm like, well, I've never seen Battlestar Galactica, but this quote is amazing.
It's a great quote. Yeah. I haven't watched Battlestar Galactica yet, but it's
and
a great quote.
I
agree.
Because I've heard it's good. And so I want to watch it. So it's good. I just finished another sci-fi show called Foundation like this week. And really good. And I want to read the books now too. But I want to watch Battlestar Galactica too. But I have a friend and like they're trans and we just nerd out. Like every day in the group chat, we are texting about something about space, about the galaxies, about whatever. And so it is just, I don't know. And I think where I got stuck on it in the book or where I got hooked on that metaphor was there's a character or a real person who's a trans person named Ellie, but their stage name when they play electric guitar is Supernova.
Supernova,
spelled K-N-O-V-A. And so I started doing a little research on supernovas and I'm like, oh my God, when you see a supernova, like if a scientist or anybody in a telescope records or sees a supernova, that happened sometimes millions of years ago. And it's so far away that the light just gets to us, the image of it, which is light. And that was mind blowing to me because it started to open my mind up to how big the galaxy is. I think as I'm writing this book, I'm also like learning so much about the universe. And so I use that metaphor in a few different ways about space and about time and things that could start a long time ago. And you could see them happening today and think, oh, that's what's happening right now. But actually the building blocks for that happened a long time ago. So in the book, I'm talking about intersex activism. You might think like, oh, we had this amazing win at Lurie in Chicago as the Intersex Justice Project. It took about 6 years. But no, that started in the the early 90s with another group of people called the Intersex Society of North America. And then for 30 years, the intersex activism ballooned and spread all over the world. And it took so many different forms and iterations. And so the supernova, the person that I met that also helped us with the win at Lurie, but also the concept of, I wanted to let people know that it wasn't just us in that day and age or that year and time. It was everybody that came before us and we were just building from that. Like, and so that's why I talked about supernovas a lot in the book. And I also used to, whenever I gave presentations, I would have these two slides and I would say, a lot of people see gender or sex as black and white. And I think I'd have like a sky with some stars in it that just looked like a black sky with white stars. And then I would say, but gender and sex is as vast as the cosmos. There's as many colors and as many like celestial beings and forms as there is ways of showing up in your gender and sex. And then I would show a picture of like, say, the Milky Way that has a whole spectrum of color and different types of, you know, comets and stars and whatever in the sky, asteroids and planets. And so I just always, I think like you said, like it represents possibility for me. It represents a different, it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy to get out of here where everything's a freaking binary. And like, not really, but like the way society has structured things is so rooted in a binary, false binaries of everything, not just sex and gender, but there's good people and there's bad people. Wrong. We're all good. Yeah. We're all bad. Like there's evil and there's good. Nope. We all have evil parts. We all have good. Well, I wouldn't, not evil, but let's just say like, you know, we all do.
But we're all capable of harm.
Exactly. And we all do good as well. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. And, you know, we can go on and on and on about all these binaries mm-hmm. that society is structured around. And to think of the unknown, this like places in space where just getting off of this planet, like we're just, you know, not in the right. like Elon Musk way, like let's just, you know, let's go colonize Mars. Like that
not in the colonizing
stupid
way.
Stupid as hell to me. Like I don't want to go to a red hot dusty ass planet and live in like a dome. But like thinking of alien cultures and civilizations, like other places mm-hmm. and like radical new ways of being and expressing ourselves. And I love space. I love the cosmos. Every chance I get, I tell people like, do you know how big space is? And then they're like, what? And I'm like, okay, watch this video on YouTube. And then, or I'll be like, do you know how big a light year is or how long? Like mm-hmm. it's amazing. And mm-hmm. I think what it helps me, because I'm a person that doesn't believe in God, and I don't have that like, oh, when I die, I'm going to go to heaven. But I think mm-hmm. believing and knowing, not believing, but just knowing about the cosmos, the limited amount that we do know, which is a lot, we know a lot, but there's so much we don't know and understand, like black holes and what is actually in right. one and what it actually happens when you cross the event horizon. But I think that gives me a sense of wonder and joy about the present life that I have, or this form of life that I have in this body right now, is just as magical as thinking about mm-hmm. like, oh, a God up there that made the earth in 7 days and I'll meet them when I die. Like that gets some people through, but I think space, knowing about space and the cosmos, is like my faith. It's like my form of faith and what gets me what keeps me alive and keeps me going is just like the quest to know more about the never ending cosmos and all the secrets and crazy things about it, learning about it. Yeah, I'm obsessed with it. And I love science fiction as well. Like I love Octavia Butler.
Oh, my God, yes.
And mm-hmm. I'm not very well versed in a lot of sci-fi, but I know that when I watch mm-hmm. it, I love it. And when I read it, I love it. And I'm excited to learn more and read more about it. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited that I asked you about space, because I saw in the book, I was like, ooh, there's space here and supernovas here. And I was like, I need to talk to Peter about this, because I'm with you. Like, just the expansiveness of our multiverse. You know, I'm like, how can people think we are so small when there is all of this, right? And how can people
right. it's like,
be so restrictive, these binaries? I'm like, come on.
Laws against us when you could be like thinking about the universe and like helping fund research into the universe and getting to know more, but rather you'd sit around making laws so that trans kids can't be on a sports team or use a bathroom. Like how little exactly. is your life and how little is your mind? Like that yes. that's what you worry about and think about. It's like, how do I harm a trans kid today?
Exactly.
Or an intersex
and
person.
When exactly, or an intersex person, or a queer kid, or honestly, anybody who doesn't fit into this idea, this control. Really, it's about control, right?
You know what?
This desire to control.
My friend said it best. My friend India Moore mm-hmm. just said the other day on red carpet that they're out here dehumanizing trans people and humanizing robots, or humanizing yes. AI and dehumanizing trans people. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think that is literally what's happening. Like trans and intersex people have always been dehumanized, and so have trans people.
Yes.
But we're seeing it enacted in legislation now. So it's such an interesting mm-hmm. time to see people, you know, celebrating AI and robots and things like that and electric autonomous vehicles, and then literally dehumanizing people, human beings that are trans or intersex. Yeah. And yeah. so of course, like my religion is the cosmos, is, you know, that's how I, that's my, like I said, that's what I have faith in, is the universe, and that there's so much more than this like petty stuff that happens here on earth.
Absolutely. And we're, and I love that. And I love that connection also of like, you know, like you said, even in your own activism, right? Like it's not, it didn't take 5 years. It took decades, right? Of building up on like that collective work. And for me, that's how I feel when I connect with the cosmos. It reminds me that we are connected. We're connected with each other. We're connected with like the green bloods, you know, trees.
Yeah.
And non-human we animals. We are the universe. The stars. We are the universe.
Like,
exactly.
That hit me last week. Like, I know other people have said this, but like, I finally understood, like, just the way I think, like, tree is part of nature. I'm a part of nature because I'm here too.
Yes.
I'm a part of this world. The world is part of the galaxy. The galaxy is part of the universe. Mm-hmm. So I'm literally the universe and the universe is me, et cetera, et cetera. Like, everything is the universe. Trees are the, you know, and it's like, it also hit me that if we all came, I think, and I want to ask you what your thoughts are about the Big Bang theory versus multiverse theory versus whatever. I have questions about that.
Oh my God. me too. I have questions too.
I have my own idea now, but it's just, you know, it's just the best guess. But I was thinking the other day that if humans started from one common ancestor, let's say, but then even when you go back in time before humans, or Homo sapiens, before Homo sapiens, there was single cell organisms. And then there was like multiple cell organisms. And then evolution, you know, and we keep going, we keep going. And then we finally get to Homo sapiens. But we all started from like one single cell organism.
Yeah.
So we actually are all from the same life source or like source. Yeah. And so I started to realize like, I started to see humans as like coral in the ocean where coral has like these appendages that reach out into the water for like food. And and like, I think humans, I think of us as the appendages on coral where we think we're these like individual things and we're like living our own life and we're all disconnected from each other and we're disconnected from our source, not like God, but like the source of whatever gave us life, like the things that came before. Yeah. And I started to also think about humans as plants or trees in the way that I started to realize like what's unfortunate about humans is you can't see our growth. So we don't look like we did when we were babies. We look different. Like I'm an adult, I'm bigger, whatever. So, but a tree, if you hit that tree or tie something around it as it's like a young tree, it grows up and it has that mark still in the tree. Or if somebody like cut off the limb, it might grow like a big, almost like a scar over it.
Yeah.
So you get to see all the stages of the tree in today's present tree. But in a human, like a lot of that stuff is like say if it's an emotional scar or emotional trauma or pain, it's hidden in the brain and the body inside. There are some scars on the skin, but I'm talking about the more invisible ones.
Yeah.
And it's kind of unfortunate because then we don't get to see the full picture of the human being. We see them just as a snapshot today, which I think gives us way less empathy for others if we're unable to see them as the child they once were, as the kid they were that was getting abused or getting isolated from people or getting made fun of or whatever. And I started to like realize like myself and other, all of us, like I think I've been walking around thinking I'm this different person than I was as a kid. Like I'm today, I'm me, I'm an adult. But I was like, oh no, like I'm literally still that baby and I'm still the child and I'm still the young adult. And I just like my cells have just shed and I've grown, but I'm literally like a piece of coral that's grew slowly and got taller. But unfortunately in humans, like we're not stuck. Yeah. We don't have roots and we're not stuck to anything. We're like detached.
Yeah.
But it's literally still there. Like, you, like it doesn't go. It's not like it's gone. Like it's literally there. And I think that that gave me a new understanding of myself and humans to see each other as like we're all connected. And like I know it's really cheesy, and I've heard a million people say this, but like if I heal you, or if I hug you, if I love you, I'm actually hugging myself, loving myself, healing myself. And the same goes if I hurt you, whatever, I hit you, I break your piece of coral off the main tree.
Yeah.
I'm doing harm to the entire world, the entire community, the whole galaxy, basically. Because we are it. We are the universe. We are the galaxy. So yeah, that's what I think. I think a lot about this type of stuff. And so, yeah, I wanted to know, because I was wondering this week, like, I've been really thinking about, this is the thing that really gets me, is like, and this might even turn me into a God believer one day, because it's like, I can't figure this out, but it's like, where, okay, say the Big Bang is your theory that you believe in. A lot of people just start at the Big Bang. They say, oh, there was this ball of mass, the entire mass of the universe in one thing.
Yeah.
It exploded. It's still exploding today. That's the universe. Cool. Mm-hmm. But where the hell did that ball of mass come from? And
exactly.
Where did everything in the universe come from? And okay, so that's where no one ever really gets to, like on the science side. They just start there, they end there, whatever. They don't care. Yeah. They're not going to talk about God. And I think that sometimes people that believe in God are like, yeah, because where did this shit come from? And so it's like, to me, it's just as crazy to say that there's a fucking ball floating in who knows what. Was it floating in nothingness? Was it float?
Also, exactly.
Where was it even floating? Where was it? And then who the fuck made it? And why was it there? It's almost as crazy to say there's a ball of mass that the whole universe was in and it exploded one day. As saying there's a guy in the sky that created the earth in 7 days. I'm like, you know what? We're all equally as crazy because all this shit is crazy. And you know what? At least you guys have salvation and thinking about heaven and shit. Cause I don't have that when I don't have religion. So, so one day I might just become like a crazy evangelical Christian. No, I'm not going to become evangelical, but, I would like to know, like the latest theory that I think, and you can cut all this out if you want. But the latest thing that I believe...
No, I think this is great.
...is like that the theory of continual death and rebirth. So
yes.
Where a universe eventually dies, like all the like matter in it, like the energy, the stars...
Expands
die
and
out.
Contracts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like there's going to... I guess be one day where the last star burns out. And then it will be complete darkness or dark energy or black holes. And then it will, like you said, collapse... And then it becomes like that ripe device or whatever, not device, but state of being where it then explodes again and becomes another universe. And that cycle of continual can just happen over and over again. So that's cool. But again, like, I'm like, that makes sense to me. I get that now because I didn't realize everything's going to die. Mm-hmm. And then what happens, blah, blah. But it's like, where did this shit come from?
But and where did this start?
And why is life so fucking amazing? Like when you really think about it. And then there's the multiverse thing, which I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah. I love the multiverse
everything
idea.
Everywhere all at
say.
Once is crazy.
Exactly.
But
oh
it's not
God,
as crazy.
That's
it's
best
not
movie
more
ever.
Crazy than anything else, you know? So it's like.
Exactly.
That's just. Yeah. And I think I heard a quote or something that somebody said that like the universe just is and that's it. That's all it is. Like, and I'm like, you know what? That's where I have to get to because I could like calm down and stop thinking about this stuff. Like it just is. And I'll never know. I'll never have the answers. So yeah.
But just because we'll never have the answers doesn't need to stop us asking the questions, right? Because it is amazing when we think about the multiverse or when we think about things expanding and contracting, you know, I really feel like our heartbeat, right? Our heart expands and contracts all the time. That's like the pulse of the multiverse, right? That I really, for me, that's where it's at. It's like expansion and contraction, life and death,
just
distraction, creation. It's
and
all
thinking about our heart,
yeah.
Like this muscle made of blood and tissue. It's just pumping every second of our lives without being plugged in. Like our bodies are not plugged into anything. There's an electrical current going through our bodies, pumping our hearts.
Exactly.
We are able to think. conceptualize, love, cry, mm-hmm. we poop and we pee, which
yeah.
my friend said that's the reason they believe in God, because they said something like, I don't know why they thought that that made God make sense for them, but I was like, that makes me not believe in God, because if God is this perfect being, then he would have made us in his image. So why do we have to take a shit all the time and pee? Like, we would have just been these perfect things that didn't need to eat and like poop and pee. So like, to me, I'm like, we're just literally animals. But like, every time I poop and pee, I'm reminded of like what an animal I am and how I've like mm-hmm. evolved from, you know, other animals that shit and piss and, you know, outside. And so yeah. It connects me to my brethren, the yeah. wildebeest and the gorilla. And so, yeah, I love thinking about things, and there's people that haven't left Chicago that I know. There's people that have never been to New York City mm-hmm. and lived in this country their whole lives. There's people that have never been to another yeah. country. And there's so many more people who have never even been taught or allowed to know what space is. Yeah. I didn't know until very recently. I didn't realize yeah. what stars were. I thought they were literally mm-hmm. just glowing, the yeah. shape of a star we drew in school. I thought mm-hmm. they were literally just these glowing things in the sky. I didn't realize those are suns. I didn't realize yeah. the sun was a star. I didn't realize star was an umbrella term. And I didn't realize that what we see are in different galaxies sometimes. And they're like stars of different galaxies. And they're just, and the light mm-hmm. is taking light years to get to us. And it's just, I think when you can start thinking on that scale and start to understand mm-hmm. or try to wrap your head, it opens your thinking up to so much more, which then makes it, I think, more possible for people to start be like a little bit more understanding and accepting of humans when they don't fit into like a binary. Because when you start to yeah. think about space, the thing that tripped me up though in my book when I was studying supernovas is mm-hmm. that there's three types of ways that supernovas can happen. And one is when a binary star system is like spinning around each other and eventually one gets collapsed into the other. And I was like, God damn it, I don't want to talk about a binary star system. It's in a book that I'm trying to talk about the vastness of gender and sex. But those are just humans. That
binary
that
system.
Yes.
Like, exactly. But and even that system is like, it collapses into each other and creates something mm-hmm. else. Right. And so is it really binary or not? Or is it just that binary is maybe momentary?
It's literally just like people just using yeah. their limited language to say, oh, there's two things up there.
Exactly.
We'll call it a binary star system. But I was like, this is really inconvenient. I'm not talking about this in my book.
But that's only one way of three ways. Yeah, so there exactly. you go. See, so even that, it's not a binary because there are multiple ways of supernovas.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Oh my God. I feel like I could have this conversation.
Me too.
For hours and hours. and I love it. And I do want to kind of honor your time.
Thank you.
And so I'm going to ask you the last question that I always ask, which is there anything else that we haven't talked about, that I have not asked you about, that you really would like people to know, whether it's about your book, whether it's about intersex activism, whether it's about space,
no,
anything else
no
that we haven't
space.
Talked about? No more about space. Okay.
I would say that I have a few. So I have executive functioning. I have problems with executive functioning stuff. I'm the master of starting projects and not finishing them. And I have finally become, well, you are very consistent at this though. I have finally become, I was in a pretty dark depression for a few years, and it started mm-hmm. before the book, but the book made it, well, the book times the lockdown, multiplied by the lockdowns and being living alone and putting myself, having to constantly revisit my childhood and some of the darkest parts of it. And in a very different way than I usually do. Like, I had to like be in my body and think, how did I feel when I was a little kid and the doctors were lifting my shirt up, or mm-hmm. when I was getting the surgery and I woke up from, you know, like, it was very dark. It was a very dark time.
Oh, there's a lot of trauma.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of trauma in the book.
I, at the end, was going to cancel the book. Like, very end, the book was basically done. And I was having such a breakdown and meltdown. And I started to worry about how would my mom feel when the book comes out and how would other people's feelings. I worried about kids I don't even know who went to the local high school that I didn't go to, because I described the high school as like a school I didn't want to go to. And I'm like, well, what about the kids that went there and then they read my book and then they're going to feel bad that I'm talking crap about their high school or in a negative way? I care too much about everything else. But I think it was a product of like, I was so mentally exhausted and traumatized by writing the book. And it was dark. It was just a dark period. And my therapist was like, look, this is not normal. What you're going through, deep diving into your history, your trauma like this every day on a daily basis for years, it's not normal. And it's going to end soon. You're going to be over with this soon. So long story short, I've been depressed for a long time, and especially the past few years. And it's been hard to like, I pulled away from social media for a few years, especially while writing the book. I thought I was going to just stop doing intersex related anything. I planned on not doing any interviews for the book. I was done. I was so burnt out. And I had this renewed sense, like, since people have read the book, and you're not the first one to say, but I'm glad because you're the first one who I don't know personally that said they read the book in one sitting.
It's an amazing book. Thank you. It really is. Honestly.
It's giving me like this renewed sense of purpose. And we talked about this before, but I'll share because I want everyone to have access to this healing if they can get it. Is I'm currently doing ketamine treatment at the hospital twice a week, getting ketamine infusions, which is supposed to be very helpful for PTSD and depression, for treatment-resistant depression and PTSD. And one of my ketamine sessions, I give myself positive self-talk. I'm like, Pigeon, you got this. Oh my God, Pigeon, you can do it. Whatever it is. Like, it's whether it's, I want to finish my film and put it online for free, or I want to finish this photo project and work, whatever it is. I'm like, everything just feels so much more possible when I'm on ketamine. Mm-hmm. And one of these sessions, I was like, Pigeon, trans people and intersex people are fucking amazing. We are the shit. We are like, fuck everybody who says we're not, who's trying to make these laws. Like, we are literally so special. We are so fucking amazing. We are the shit. We are like, I just like was so blown away by us. And then I was like, and why would you throw away your work that you've done so long for the intersex community? Like, why would I stop and quit now? This is my purpose. This is my calling. This is, and I can do it. Like, I have already done good stuff in my community and I could do more. So what I would say to people listening is I have some projects I want to finish. I have a renewed sense of commitment and vigor to the cause. And one of the projects is my initial film that I made. My first film is called The Son I Never Had. I made it when I was when I was graduating grad school at DePaul. I went to the same school twice for grad school and undergrad. And, you know, I need someone to help me. It's finished, but for instance, I like took animation work from Disney and I don't have a permission, and I like inserted it in the film, or I have music that might not be completely, what's it called, like royalty free in it, or I would like to fill in some gaps like with animation or video. I just want someone that knows, like that can like mentor me or give me an accountability partner that could be like, this is what needs to be done to release this to the public. And this is what you need to do. Let's do it. Because I want that film to be accessed by as many people as possible. But I want to do it in the right way where I'm not going to get like a legal letter at my door from Walt Disney or whatever.
Yes.
So, but this is a beautiful film. And the whole thing I wanted to do with it was to put it out there for free so people could have it. The other project is called Physical Record. It's a film photography project I started years ago where I went around and took pictures of intersex people all over the world on black and white film photography because I wanted to create a physical record of our existence on actual physical film. And I have all these pictures. They're all scanned. They're beautiful. They're on they're on medium format film. And the stage of like sharing them, I got stuck years ago and never did because I don't know how to I don't want to just put the pictures online. I want to like collect stories from the people that I took photos from and maybe put them together as a book or a zine, or like think mm-hmm. of a way to show them in, like exhibits, but also then just put them online. But I want them online, like with the stories of the people. But I also want like a mm-hmm. physical copy made, like a book. So if anybody wants to yes. help me with that, or just send me money, because then I could get the help myself. What's the other project? I'm going to be working on a film soon. A new documentary where we're going to actually, because I was burnt out of the trauma stuff, I wanted to focus on the highlights. I mean, on the successes of intersex people and like positive mm-hmm. stories. So we're going to go around the world, and we're actually probably going to go. Oh, wait, are we going to Italy? I don't know if we're going to Italy, but we're going to Ooh. Greece.
Well, I hope you get to go to Italy.
Me too. we're going to Greece and other places because wherever there's been like a success, like a legislative success or yes. or otherwise, mm-hmm. For intersex people, we're going to document those stories and ask, how did you do this? What happened? Tell us the story. I collect those into a documentary. So if you want to help fund that film, we need money for that as well. We have funding. We have some funding from an endowment, like a national endowment or something. I always forget the word, but something from the government mm-hmm. for the arts or something, endowment.
Oh, yeah, endowment for the arts.
Something like that. Yeah, we have something like that. We could always use more money and experience if you have mm-hmm. experience, production experience, or whatever you want to learn. So that's the last thing I would say is like, I have a lot of these projects I want to finish and get out. I think there's one or two. Oh, I'm working on a podcast pretty soon.
Awesome.
That's going to be hopefully with like a trans co-host, and we're going to, I don't want to get into it right now, like give it away, but it's going to be very timely to the things that we've talked about. What's going on in the legislative mm-hmm. in the legislation around the country. So I have all these projects, but I'm one person and mm-hmm. I need help. So if you can help me, if you have a skill set that's like, you can help me get my first film out there, or you could help me, or you, if you're have the skill of having a lot of money and you could donate me some money, mm-hmm. whatever it is, just, you know, hit me up. My website is www.pid.ge. It's very weird, but it's my name.
That's page. What I was about to ask you. Exactly.
It's .ge because the country of Georgia has a domain name .ge. So I was able to put pid.ge, which is my name, my nickname. And
I think that's awesome.
You know, my email's there. Hit me up with what you could do.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing I would say is like, I need your help. And thank you for, you know, caring about intersex people and for, mm-hmm. For working hard for us as well as allies. And mm-hmm. We need you and you need us. And so let's go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pigeon. That was so beautiful. And listeners and viewers now, because this is also going to be on YouTube as well as on the podcast. That's right. If you've got skills, if you've got money, you heard it. Hit Pigeon up. Their website is going to be in the description as well. PID.G. It's an easy one to remember too. So hit them up with your donation, with your skills. Let's make this happen, because all those projects sound awesome. And thank you. Thank you so much for your time, Pigeon. I so appreciate you. Appreciate you, the beautiful words in your book, the amazing work and activism that you've done and continue to do. And I can't wait to see what you do next. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And you could pre-order Nobody Needs to Know.
Oh, that's right.
My memoir.
That's right. I'm showing the book.
You get a discount if you pre-order. So I never understood why people did pre-orders, but now I do. If you do a pre-order.
Pre-orders are really important.
You get a discount. Yeah. So mm-hmm. if you want.
So pre-order the book.
And you want a discount, you should pre-order it. But it comes out August 15th. I hope you guys read it. I hope you share it with people in your life, and I hope it helps change some, open some people's hearts up, and it also makes other people feel seen, because growing up, I didn't have a single person to look up to. I didn't have a single role model that was intersex anywhere, and this book will change that for a lot of intersex people, and I mean, it's already been changing, but this will add to that as well. So thank you so much Absolutely. For having me to talk about the book, and thanks for reading it.
Oh, it's so beautiful. So yes, people, pre-order this book, read this book, share it, gift it. It's beautiful. Nobody Needs to Know.
Oh, no,
Pigeon
I don't know if you noticed
comes
this,
out August 15th.
But there's little stars mm-hmm. on the cover in the heads.
I did notice that.
Of the galaxies, yeah.
The cover is so beautiful. For those of you who are listening, it's just like shapes of heads, but like this cosmos and stars inside. And it's like pinks and purples and reds and blues. And it's a beautiful cover. Yeah. So get the book. Get the physical copy if you can, because the cover is beautiful.
Oh, and invite me to speak. That's how I make most of my money
yes.
is I'm an intersex lecturer, guest speaker, panelist, consultant, et cetera, at universities, companies. I've worked, you know, for everybody you could think of, and I need more jobs. So please hit my inbox up with speaking requests, and I would love to write back to you and come speak to your group in person or virtually. And that's it. That's everything.
I love it. So you've heard it here. Pre-order the book. Read the book. Hit Pigeon up for trainings, consultations, speaking.
Readings.
If you got skills to make the readings. That's right. You've got to do some book tour readings.
Yes.
Exactly. So, and hit them up with some paid gigs and some skills and some donations for the beautiful project.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.